Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. The recent discovery of the bodies of 215 Indigenous children on the site of a residential school in Kamloops, British Columbia, impacted the residents of Alderville. A range of emotions were felt throughout the community, from heartache to grief to anger. A march was quickly organized on May 31st to bring people together. They walked from the health center on County Road 45 up to the war monument near the band council's office. Flags were lowered across the county and across the country. There was an outpouring of sadness, but there was also anger. A call for action on the 94 recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission went out. Locally, Cobourg Council approved a previous request from 2017 to rename the West Pier and Headlands. It was named after Hector Louis Levin, a father of Confederation and an architect of the residential school system. On today's show, Alderville Councillor and historian Brian Beaver returns to share his thoughts on the news of the 215 children and provide some local perspective on his own reaction and the reaction of the community. Next, the Help and Legal Center of Northumberland completed a major study of its operations. It provides free service to people who need assistance, from being evicted to doing taxes for seniors and a whole lot more. All these services are free. Beth Belair, the chairperson of the Board of Directors, will share the findings of this detailed study and outline some of the issues and recommendations of the report. But first, Brian Beaver talks about the 215 Indigenous children buried on the site of a residential school in Kamloops. A warning for listeners: this story has disturbing details. Some listeners may find the contents emotionally difficult. If you are feeling triggered, the National Indian Residential School Crisis Hotline can be reached at 1-866-925-4419. That's 1-866-925-4419. Here is Brian Beaver. I'm so pleased to have with me today Brian Beaver, a counselor and a historian in Alderville. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you, Robert, for inviting me to share my views on this unfortunate situation. First off, I'd like to thank the neighbors in the township and the county for their support. If you drive around Elmwood Township, for example, near Alderville First Nation, you see orange shirts hanging at the gates at nearby farms and houses. There's been an outpouring of support for us across Canada, actually. What's ironic is this is an Indigenous History Month. What a bad time for these types of news items to come out. The Indigenous people suffered indignity after indignity. There was a report on murdered and missing Indigenous women. There was a situation with Joyce Etchegwan, where she recorded her lying in the hospital bed with the nurses demeaning and ridiculing her in Quebec. She later died. The family says her death could have been prevented. Then we got news of 215 children being found buried at the residential school in Kamloops. This hurt us deeply. It's worse when children are involved, of course. Children should be protected and nurtured. Indigenous people are still mourning the news weeks later. This has opened old wounds. I wondered, weren't the children's bodies returned to the families when they died? I wondered if the families were actually notified. I've seen reports where when families came to visit the school, they were told that the children had run away and they hadn't been hurt since, and yet they had died. There was an example where the Truth and Reconciliation Commission said that there was a report of students having to bury other students at the residential school grounds. There was an example from Fort Caval, Saskatchewan, where a former student talked on CBC and showed where the nuns whipped them. They made them clean the stairs with a toothbrush, a room where the boys were taken for sexual purposes, and other atrocities. It's so sad and unfortunate. A former student said he didn't get a hug for years. No one told him he was loved all that time. These students were not nurtured during these formative years. Of course, these years are important for social and emotional development. I think the result is problems where people who haven't been nurtured are trying to fill the void with alcohol or drugs, for example. If you look at Vancouver's east side, you see many people abusing alcohol and drugs, left trying to fill the void left by experience at the residential schools. This is going to take generations to resolve. Some of the earlier treaties were signed by First Nations where they gave up millions of acres for such promises of schools to be built on the reserves. But few, if any, were built. Canada argues it meant to pay salaries of teachers, not build schools. So all these students were sent to residential schools. To be fair, some students said they had a good experience at the schools, but far too many were sexually abused, physically abused, mentally abused, were given poor food, punished for speaking their language, had their hair cut, clothes taken. There was an example of a young student in British Columbia where her mother gave her a beautiful orange shirt to wear to the school. The school took it and it was never seen again. That's why we acknowledge the residential school situation with Orange Shirt Day. And of course, all these students lost their culture, their language and traditions as a result of attending these schools. Indian Affairs and the churches didn't promote programs to retain these important aspects of their life. At Alderville, we were lucky. We had our own school at the First Nation, so our students were not taken away. Although we did have two families who were unfortunately sent to residential schools. I recall a great uncle who said he ran away from the school and he told us about walking backwards from the school so that the school officials wouldn't know he had left. They would have thought he was walking towards the school, so they never ever did catch him. A little bit of interest there from the Alderville perspective. There's the example of Shanai Wenjack, who ran away and died trying to walk 600 miles back to his First Nation. This was made famous by Gord Downie, of course. A lot of people have heard of this sad story. The deaths were unnecessary. There was about 150,000 students who went through the schools who had that unfortunate experience. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission said 4,100 to 6,000 died amid abuse and neglect. And so much of this was unnecessary. In 1890, for example, physician Dr. Orton said the schools had poor ventilation, tuberculosis resulted, and if any of the fairs and the churches had fixed the schools, deaths could be reduced by at least half. But the government said it was too expensive. In 1907, Dr. Bryce, the chief medical inspector for Indian Affairs, gave a report stating that the schools had unsanitary conditions. There were numerous deficiencies with high death rates and usually tuberculosis. In 1920, Duncan, the superintendent general of Indian Affairs, made residential school attendance mandatory, saying he wanted to get rid of the Indian problem. In 1922, Dr. Bryce submitted his report entitled A National Crisis. He said that within 5 years of entry, 30 to 60% of students died. Tuberculosis was usually the cause. Government ignored his resignation, saying again they were just too expensive. So today we're demanding accountability for this, these atrocities. The Pope should apologize. The Roman Catholic Church should open its records to show where the students were buried, why they were buried, how they died, what families were notified, etc. They should pay, churches and government should pay the cost of searching for more bodies at residential schools across Canada, because there are more for sure. That's a known fact. The Pope hasn't apologized. The United Church apologized in 1986. The Oblates of Mary Immaculate apologized in 1991. The Anglicans in 1993 and the Presbyterian Church in 1994. Why can't the Roman Catholic Church apologize? From a local perspective, I'd like to bring up the Langevin block in Coburg. Langevin was one of the architects of the residential school program. One of the parliament buildings, they call them blocks, was named after Langevin. Recently, Trudeau decided that that name should be changed, so Langevin was dropped. That brings us to the situation now with the Coburg Pier. One of the piers has been named after Langevin and has been for many years. Back in about 2017, two local residents in Coburg, Megan Sheffield and Nicole Beatty, made a submission to Coburg Council to change the name of Langevin Pier. They invited the Chief of Alderville to make a presentation. They didn't recommend a name, but they had suggested perhaps it be a Mississauga name, given that Coburg is located on Mississauga Indigenous traditional territory. I understand today that the Coburg Council has followed through on that request. You had an update on that, Robert?
I did, Brian. I understand that at its last meeting, Coburg Council has immediately removed the name of Langevin, and it is now undertaking a process to, as you said, find an Indigenous name for the West Pier and Headlands.
Thank you for that. So those were all my comments. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to share my views and the views of the Indigenous people. Did you have any questions, anything?
I do, Brian.
Clarification, sure.
Yeah, I'd like to start maybe with a little more of a personal view from you. I know you're speaking in broad historic terms, and I respect that deeply. But what was your reaction on the news about the bodies of the 215 children that were found buried?
It was horrible. It brought tears to my eyes. The news wasn't new in the sense that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission back when they made the report, did say that there were bodies buried at the schools and that the government should make a move to identify them, but that has not happened. Again, 215 children. It's horrible. It's disturbing. It's sad. There's just, you can't hear anything worse. I think the only thing that could make it worse is if they were your own children. But I grieve for the families who had to hear this news, the relatives of all those children. As I say, it's disturbing, and you know, it's been on the news continuously since then, and I still get tears in my eyes when it comes up.
How did the community respond? I understand that there was a march on May 31st. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what happened?
Yes, a couple of the members had suggested that we that the community needs to recognize our support for those families that have suffered. We need to take an opportunity to display our concern, of an opportunity to grieve with the families, an opportunity to show our support. So we decided that we would have a march from our health center about a mile and a quarter down to Alderville's War Memorial. And so we did that. We all wore orange shirts in support of the families. We had a large turnout. A lot of children came, a lot of women and men. It was a tremendous turnout, and we were pleased.
The discovery and the subsequent fallout has triggered many Indigenous people to share their stories about residential schools once more. But there have been those who on social media and on other media have said, enough with the stories. We all know that it was bad. Why is it important to continue to share these experiences inside residential schools, both now and in the future?
I guess the obvious point is we want to avoid these types of situations happening to any group in Canada, not just to Indigenous people, but other groups as well. I think an unfortunate situation came up in London where a driver in a car allegedly killed four Muslim members of a family intentionally. This is another example of racism, of people harming others. We just want to ensure that the message gets out there that Indigenous people have been victims again and again and again. We want to ensure that those responsible are held accountable. As I mentioned before, that the bodies need to be identified at other schools across Canada. These issues need to be resolved.
Now, the federal government and the provincial government have promised monies towards doing surveys of other residential schools and other sites. Will Alderville be applying for some funds, and does it want to have a survey done of the residential school site?
We did have a type of residential school back in 1858, roughly to about 1861, but it was a different type of a school compared to the schools that were put in place by the residential school program later. We had an industrial school where the students were taught trades. That is, the men were taught trades, the women domestic chores. It was administered by the Methodist missionaries who who moved with us from the Bay of Quinte to Alnwick Township in 1837. So we did have a type of residence school. Students from a few First Nations in the area attended. There was some deaths of the students. Usually it was typhus or tuberculosis. So we're pretty sure that some of the bodies have been buried behind our United Church. So that is an option for all of the council to think about, to apply for some of this funding. But we've discussed it on other occasions in the last 2 years before this news came out. So it's something we are moving on that is very important to us.
I know in past conversations with you, we've talked about the industrial school and we also talked about the day school, which were two different things. Now, the industrial school, my understanding was that the community had much more influence. The Indigenous people were partners in this school, or at least were heavily involved financing, and it wasn't the same as other residential schools where the Indigenous people were not involved. Am I correct in that, or have I got it wrong?
No, you're correct. Alderville and other First Nations who sent students to the schools contributed a lot of the dollars that were used for administrative purposes, et cetera, et cetera. So there was support from the chiefs at the time. But unfortunately, the experience wasn't positive for a lot of the students because the students were basically farm laborers. There was long hours. They were up at 4 a.m. doing farm chores. They'd spend part of the time in school. Then they'd be back out into the farm again at night working. So a lot of the chiefs were very concerned about the long hours. They were concerned about tuberculosis and typhus. These were diseases that were affecting a lot of Indigenous people at the time, and non-Indigenous people, I think, as well. So the government decided, because of these issues, that they would close the industrial school in 1861.
So it was truly then the Indigenous people, because of their reaction, that's one of the big reasons why the school closed. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's part of it, yeah.
Now, the day school, it was something different. But being a day school, as you mentioned earlier, local children were able to go there. I also understand that there was an Indigenous teacher also who was local who taught there as well. Am I correct in that?
Yes, that was Jack Lukes. He started teaching in 1937, if my memory is correct, and taught for many, many years. We were fortunate to have a teacher who taught our parents and our other relatives and at the same time taught us, not at the same time, but later taught us. It was fortunate that we had a member of our own community who was in a position to teach us.
Should the residential schools be torn down?
No, I think they should be kept as museums, as examples of past atrocities. I know some of them have been torn down. It's unfortunate. There was a report of a residential school in perhaps Saskatchewan where the land was sold by the church, sold on a condition that the school be retained and the bodies of any children not be disturbed. But the land was sold over and over again, and now there are houses on these on the location where the former school was situated. So it's very unfortunate in that particular case, for sure.
Now, this incident has rekindled calls for the federal government to implement all the recommendations from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which were offered 9 years ago. Do you believe the current climate in the country will motivate the federal and provincial governments to address these recommendations?
I think the identification of 215 children's bodies will provide an impetus. That news ricocheted around the world immediately. It was reported in Rome, Paris, China. China had a field day with it, of course, because Canada's always concerned with Chinese human rights conditions. So a lot of countries were appalled. I listened to the Pope give his speech last Sunday where he acknowledged the situation in Kamloops, but again, he didn't apologize. The United Nations has said that Canada should identify all the bodies, pay for it, and identify all the bodies that were buried in residential schools across Canada. The world has just made their points known. I think Canada will react appropriately to it. At least I hope they will.
So what is the role of allies within our community? For those who support the Indigenous community's cry for justice, what can people do?
People can communicate with their member of a provincial government. They can communicate with the member of parliament for the federal government, show their support that way, demand that action be taken. They can educate themselves on the whole history of residential schools. My book, for example, Alderville First Nation, A History, has a lot of information on assimilationist policies, both by the churches and government. They can learn about Alderville through that and the people of Alderville and how they responded and so on and so on.
Brian Beaver, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. I appreciated this. I enjoyed the talk.
That was my interview with Brian Beaver, Alderville counselor and historian. If you are feeling triggered, the National Indian Residential School Crisis Hotline can be reached at 1-866-925-4419. That's 866-925-4419. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.